Welcome to the third episode in our podcast series on the dangers of magnet ingestion in pediatric patients. The series is sponsored by the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition, and the NASPGHAN Foundation. I'm Dr. Marcia Kay, a pediatric gastroenterologist and department chair of the Department of Pediatric Gastroenterology and Nutrition at the Cleveland Clinic. This podcast focuses on endoscopy and surgical removal of magnets in pediatric patients. Our faculty today is Dr. Mark Gilger, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and section head of gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Baylor College of Medicine, and chief of service of gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Texas Children's Hospital, Dr. Robert E. Kramer, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and associate professor of pediatrics at the Digestive Health Institute, section of pediatric gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at the University of Colorado, Denver, and the Children's Hospital. Dr. Adam Noel, who is a pediatric gastroenterologist and associate professor of pediatrics in the Department of Pediatrics, section of pediatric gastroenterology at Louisiana State University Health Science Center and Children's Hospital of New Orleans. Dr. David Magnuson, who is a pediatric surgeon and department chair of pediatric surgery at the Cleveland Clinic.
Thanks for joining us. This is Dr. Adam Noel, and I am here today to discuss the issues surrounding endoscopic and surgical removal of neodymium magnets in the pediatric patient. We are going to present two cases, one focusing on endoscopic intervention and the other focusing on surgical removal. The first case I'd like to present involves a 3-year-old patient who swallowed 39 magnets. This 3-year-old child presented on a Friday afternoon was noted to be playing with magnetic balls with his older brother had received as a present. The parents were present at that time, and during the play process, the toddler pulled a blanket over his head for a short period. When the blanket was pulled back, the parents noted that many of the magnetic balls that the child was playing with were missing. They brought the child to the emergency room where a x-ray showed that he had many balls in his stomach. He spent several hours in the emergency room, then was sent home after observation and was told that if the balls did not pass, to seek an involvement of a pediatric gastroenterologist. An astute nurse at that emergency room did a web search after the child had left and found that the child needed immediate attention. After she did this, she called our emergency room, and our emergency room arranged for the child to be transferred to our facilities. During the transfer process, the patient was told to stay on his left side, and he was transported to the emergency room and arrived at approximately 11:30 in the evening, approximately 6 hours after ingestion. A flat plate abdominal film at that time was done along with a lateral x-ray of his abdomen. The radiographic imaging at that time showed that there was a large number of magnets in the stomach and a few in the esophagus. The patient was brought to the emergency room for endoscopic removal of these foreign bodies. The patient had an endotracheal tube placed and underwent the endoscopic procedure to remove the magnets. The magnets were removed sequentially in small chains. At the end of the procedure, the magnets were counted, and there was a total of 39 magnets removed. Following the removal of the magnets, the patient was re-examined endoscopically and was noted to have some deep pressure lesions in his gastric mucosa from the magnets. A repeat radiologic exam following removal showed that all the magnets had been removed. The patient was admitted for observation during the initial feeding process and was subsequently discharged. A repeat endoscopy 3 weeks later showed that all the deep pressure lesions had healed and that there was only mild mucosal thickening at the site of the previous deep pressure lesion. Now we are going to open this case to discussion with Mark Gilger, Dr. David Magnuson, and Robert Kramer.
Yeah, hi, Adam. Rob Kramer. And I want to say, I think with this experience, you probably have more direct experience per magnet than many people. I was wondering if you might comment on sort of what endoscopic tools you used found were the best in terms of actually capturing these multiple magnets.
Well, Robert, I think, you know, when there's just a small amount of magnets present. Rothnet or a similar net type of device is very good to remove them because you can encompass all the magnets at one time. Unfortunately, when you have such a large number of magnets, if you try to use the Rothnet without appropriately separating the chains, magnets can get stuck on both the front and back end of the net, and you can wind up pulling a large mass of magnets back, and you can get trapping of the magnets below the lower esophageal sphincter and potentially tear the lower esophageal sphincter. So I think in some cases it may be even better to use a snare, since these magnets are so adherent to one another that you can break them apart and then hold the top magnet in the chain and pull, and with general traction pull it through the lower esophageal sphincter and up the esophagus without a problem. We tried to use other types of forceps, but they tend to, because of the round shape of the magnets, they tend to just pop off the magnets as you are trying to break them apart using standard forceps.
Adam, this is Mark Gilgrat. Thank you for an interesting case. You know, one point that I think is important to make is how long of a duration between ingestion and potential endoscopic removal makes sense. So in this case, it was about 6 hours. And here at Texas Children's Hospital, we've had a couple of cases where we feel up to 12 hours after ingestion, endoscopic removal is still safe, and the likelihood of perforation is quite small. But it seems as if somewhere between 12 and 48 hours, the likelihood of a perforation increases dramatically. And I'd really like to hear Dave Magnuson's thought from a pediatric surgical point of view.
Well, hi, yeah, this is Dave Magnuson. In responding to that question, and also related to what you found endoscopically with pressure ulceration, I mean, if I've got this visualized right, the way that these things can cause problems is by having neodymium magnets on opposite or on adjacent bowel loops and attracting each other through two adjacent bowel loops or the stomach and a bowel loop that might be superimposed. So I would imagine that it's not so much a time issue as it is how, you know, whether or not the other magnets have escaped the stomach. And if I think if you could document with a plain X-ray that the magnets remained in the stomach, that it would certainly be worthwhile doing an endoscopy at almost any time period to see if you could you could remove them. The pressure ulceration that you were describing in your presentation, I wonder if that was between a redundant or within a redundant loop of gastric mucosa with magnets on each side of it, as opposed to deep into the gastric wall.
The lesion was actually between part of the gastric mucosa and between the esophageal magnets, and then there was also another area where redundant gastric mucosa within the stomach was in a fold was caught between two magnets.
Yeah, so I don't think that would be too, there'd be much hazard in trying to remove them under a circumstance like that. So I think if the magnets are all in one hollow organ, I don't think that there's too much of a theoretical barrier in terms of timing.
You know, Mark, we have EndoClips available. When I took the previous case a couple of years ago, I had the surgeon in the room with me because I had a very, very deep ulceration, but it hadn't quite perforated. And we used the EndoClips to close that weakened area of the stomach because it was between the stomach and the duodenum. So I think, you know, as long as you're prepared, if you're pushing past 12 hours or whatever and you have a surgeon available to look at the endoscopy with you, that you can possibly use EndoClips to reinforce the ulceration or the near perforation.
Yeah, Adam, you know, really good point. We now have the capability to close perforations using endoscopically placed EndoClips, and we've certainly had success here at Texas Children's. And I think the take-home point is here, if you have a suspected perf or near perf, you can certainly try and close it. But I always keep my surgeons nearby to make sure that this process goes smoothly and efficiently.
Well, I think that probably ends the discussion for this case. I'd like to ask Dr. Kramer and Dr. Magnuson to present cases involving surgical removal.
Thank you, Adam. This is Rob Kramer, and I'd like to present a case of ileal perforation that we had at our institution. This was a 4-year-old male who presented to his primary care physician within one day of starting with crampy abdominal pain, some lethargy, and decreased appetite, although he had remained afebrile. The pediatrician astutely obtained a KUB, which showed small, round, foreign objects in the abdomen, and referred him to our emergency department for further evaluation. Within the emergency department, he admitted he had swallowed magnets, which he had actually received for his birthday 4 days prior. Repeat abdominal film within our ER showed 4 adjacent radiopaque objects in the right lower quadrant, possibly in the terminal ileum, and some scattered air fluid levels consistent with a partial small bowel obstruction. He was evaluated by surgery, who felt that his abdomen was benign and recommended discharge with follow-up by his pediatrician with repeat films. The next day, he again had abdominal pain and bilious vomiting, and he was returned to the emergency department. A CBC at that time showed a slightly elevated white count of 13.6 with 85% SEGS. A repeat film showed unchanged position of his magnets but improved gas pattern and no free air. He was again evaluated by surgery and felt that his abdomen was benign, and he was discharged home with instructions for Miralax and enemas. He returned to our emergency department 2 days later with increasing pain and low-grade fever. Repeat films showed no movement of the magnets and increased bowel dilatation with concern, again, for partial bowel obstruction. He did not have any free air at that time, but his white count was further elevated to 17.5 with some left shift. There were no peritoneal signs on exam, but a CT scan with IV contrast was performed, showing the 4 radio-opaque foreign bodies anterior to the cecum within a distal loop of small bowel. Again, there was no free air or fluid in the peritoneum. Given the lack of progression of the magnets and increasing symptoms, the decision was made to bring him to the operating room. Within the operating room, he was found to have 3 separate walled-off ileal perforations and 1 perforation in the cecum, with magnets lodged in each of these different sites, but drawn together to create a single site of fistulization. The cecal perforation was oversewn, and an ileal resection of 8.9 centimeters was performed to repair the other sites, and a primary anastomosis was able to be accomplished. He was placed on antibiotics and had an uneventful recovery, and was finally discharged home on postoperative day number 6. So for me, this case brings up a number of important points in terms of the evolution of management of these magnet ingestions. I think with this patient, with the repeated return to the emergency department with GI symptoms in the context of a magnet injection ingestion and a lack of movement on the films, I think we should can sort of discuss if what should be our level of concern and how rapidly should we move forward towards intervention. And again, I would defer to Dr. Magnuson for comment.
Yeah, Rob. Hi, Dave Magnuson here. Well, I'd like to say that as surgeons, we would have jumped on this quicker at our institution, but the truth of the matter is we probably would not have. As all of you guys, I'm sure, are familiar with, most surgeons drag their feet quite a bit when it comes to gastrointestinal foreign bodies, because most of them pass and very few of them present a real surgical risk. And this is really more of an issue that requires recognition on the part of the surgical community that these magnets really present a risk in circumstances that aren't, you know, previously recognized for other kinds of foreign bodies. In a situation like this, I think the two key findings are, one, the history that these are neodymium magnets, and they're stronger than your usual household magnets as a foreign body, and then the lack of change or progression on multiple X-rays. So I think if I were going to approach a situation like this in our own institution, I think simply the history of ingesting magnets like this, and then X-ray evidence that there's more than one magnet, because I think it probably requires more than one to cause damage, and that those magnets are fixed in space and they're not progressing through the GI tract and they remain adjacent to each other, are probably enough to warrant some sort of exploration. Unfortunately, I don't think laparoscopy is much help here, because you really need to be able to palpate the bowel. And if you're going to retrieve these things before they've formed a fistula, it's going to require an enterotomy for retrieval. So most of these kids are probably going to get a limited laparotomy and manual inspection and palpation of the GI tract and hopefully retrieval from the lumen of the GI tract prior to any sort of inflammatory fistula has developed. But I think your surgeons probably responded to this about like we would have, or the vast majority of surgeons who really aren't familiar with this kind of new threat.
Right. Well, I wonder, too, again, in retrospect, everything always seems so much clearer. But I think it highlights, the need for GI and surgery to work in concert in these patients, because I think potentially, this earlier in the course could have been amenable to endoscopic retrieval and perhaps could have even avoided an exploratory surgery even if before perforation had occurred.
Yeah, certainly true.
Robert and Dr. Magnuson, could you possibly comment on the role of small bowel enteroscopy in this type of case, or maybe even laparoscopic-assisted endoscopy? And maybe also comment on, Dr. Magnuson, you had mentioned in a previous conversation with us that the symptoms may not always correlate with the development of potential surgical areas that may need to be addressed later.
Well, you know, the damage that's caused by these magnets are when they line up in adjacent loops of bowel and attract each other and then erode through the bowel. There are numerous reports over the last 15 years of neodymium magnets being used deliberately to create gastrointestinal anastomoses in novel ways. So we know that they can erode through bowel, and they know that they can form fistulas, and I sense that this is not dissimilar to Crohn's fistulas forming in patients who are nearly asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic over a long period of time. So they're not likely to present with frank peritonitis or free air, and these things are probably, kind of a smoldering phlegmon inflammatory event with fistulas developing without free perforation into the peritoneal cavity. So I think you have to have a really low threshold for what you would consider significant symptoms and physical findings in a patient with one of these ingestions. And like I said before, I think the cardinal things that certainly are that I'm going to remember about these presentations are the confirmed history of ingesting in multiple neodymium magnets and then failure of those magnets to change or move to the GI tract on X-rays. That would be enough to get me into the abdomen.
Right. Yeah, and Adam, I would comment as well. I think you bring up a good point. I think as we have better capability, even within smaller children, to perform small bowel enteroscopy with either single or double balloon enteroscopes, that foreign bodies that previously we would not have thought accessible endoscopically really maybe at certain centers that have experience with these techniques really will be approachable. And I think in an effort to decrease the morbidity and mortality of these types of lesions, if that's a possibility at your institution, then I would readily encourage using that tool.
Robert, this is Mark Gilger. You know, one other really interesting point from this particular case is early in the history, you mentioned that this young boy had received these toys as a present for his birthday.
Yeah.
And I think it's really a take-home to mom and dad that these neodymium magnets are not grandpa's magnets and have the potential for real problems.
They weren't given to him by a surgeon, were they?
Well, our case, the 3-year-old, that was 11-year-old brother's birthday gift.
Yeah.
Right. Beware of birthdays.
Yeah. Well, these are clearly hazardous things, I'm kind of glad I got exposed to this because I don't think my approach to this sort of a scenario in the future is going to be the same as what my approach would have been in the past.
Well, I would like to close by saying that our faculty hopes that we were able to alert you to the fact that these neodymium magnets are dangerous and do require action. We need to raise awareness about the impact of ingestion, options for intervention, and how to optimize management. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode on the dangers of magnet ingestion in pediatric patients. Please go to naspagan.org to receive future episodes. I'm Marcia Kay.